since that time of 24 years ago, and now the base money supply has gone up 9 times. So you got to take that $2,500 an ounce and multiply it by 9 to get the same equivalent price into fiat. That's how much inflation we've seen over the last 25 years, or half of the 50 I just alluded to.
Hey friends, welcome back. That was David Morgan. And do we have a story for you? Gold and silver in physical form are wealth, not commodities. And for those who follow Bitcoin, which we also discuss in this interview, today's your lucky day if you'd like to make an entry point on Saturday afternoon because of the warmongering in the Middle East and Iran launching 50 drones toward Israel. You can see what they did to Bitcoin. We'll see how that shakes out in coming days, as the Bitcoin halving is next week. Friends, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And just one reminder, the death machine controlled by the international criminal banking cabal won't stop until they've been defeated or you're on your knees. Thanks so much for tuning in. Before we start, just a quick word about a very important sponsor. We've told you the truth about the destruction and the demise of the US dollar and its purchasing power on this channel for more than a decade. So how do you feel about leaving your money in the bank? Not great, right? It's losing value every single day because it's being debased. So if it's stressing you out, why not invest smarter with Noble Gold Investments? Precious metals are simple and real, tangible wealth. And by the way, gold just broke a new all-time high in USD. There isn't a company on the stock market that was around 2,000 years ago, but guess what? Gold was. It's a reliable, dependable, and authentic way to protect your wealth. That's why you can't go wrong with precious metals. They always have your back. Noble Gold Investments is the same. Their American-based experts will show you how to set and forget your IRA or 401k. Now, there's no guarantee of any kind with any investment, so do your own due diligence, but you'll get a dedicated professional assigned to you from Noble Gold. So no hassle, no call centers. This month, Noble Gold Investments is giving a free quarter-ounce gold standard coin with every qualifying IRA investment. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to claim your gold coin. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's Sean from SGT Report. Are you prepared for the collapse? Guys, the fall of the Republic seems to be at hand in so many ways, not the least of which is these Congress critters and senatorial goblins want to unleash the FBI to be able to spy on all of us without a warrant. Now, to me, that sounds like Soviet Russia or communist China. But no, that's the country, the formerly great Republic of the United States that y'all live in. By the way, they're hyperinflating your currency away. Have you seen what's been going on with the gold and silver price? Last night, gold hit $2,403. Silver is also finally breaking out. Bitcoin, north of $70,000. You know, I've got the great David Morgan on the line, silver guru. And his website, as y'all know, is themorganreport.com. He's going to help us break it all down. David, welcome back.
Well, Sean, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Good to have you, my friend. Let's just do a little bit of a news roundup, and you jump in at any point. Pushed up by central banks, Bank of America sees gold at 3,000, while UBS sees it at 4,000 USD. Goldman sees it at 2,700. Here's the quote: "We have a much bigger problem than they acknowledge. That's why the price of gold is at a record high. That's why it's going to keep going up." And as we're having this conversation on Friday, April 12th, guys, we're going to talk about David's thoughts on all of it. And here's what I would say to Peter Schiff, as what happened last night hasn't happened in the 17-year existence of this chart. Gold breaking higher, interest rates, I think that's the 10-year, plummeting. That makes zero sense. Something is really, really broken. And I'm coming back to you, David. The thesis I would make for Peter Schiff regarding Bitcoin is it's beginning to rise all boats, right? Bitcoin, they can't let Bitcoin go to 100,000 and continue to keep gold below 2,000 and silver at 22. It makes zero sense. Something has broken. What explains gold finally moving higher and being the barometer it should be against hyperinflation, David?
It's a mouthful. It's a tough one to answer, Sean. But, you know, I mean, the easy answer is obvious and apparent to anyone that's even been studying markets at a cursory level, and that is buying pressure. All markets move on buying pressure or selling pressure. So the question becomes, well, why is there so much buying pressure? And then above that, well, who is it? Who's doing all the buying? And the answer there is very interesting because on the retail side, there hasn't been much buying. If you look at the stock sector, a subset of gold and silver, the silver miners and the gold miners, they're hitting new 52-week highs in some cases. PASS did that today. And that sounds great. Oh, 52-week high. But if you look at the chart, it's still trading when silver was at like $20 an ounce instead of pushing toward 30. So the miners really haven't performed commensurate with the move in gold and silver. The retail sector is really not buying hand over fist at the price it would indicate. And so where does the buying come from? And the nearest we can determine is that it's a lot of futures trading, and it is probably China or the Asian markets. There is a big differential between the price of gold and silver in the Asian markets than there is in the LBMA, the London market, or the COMEX in New York's market. And that, I think, is what's driving it. Is it physically driven? I don't think so, Sean. I think it's mostly on paper, but the Shanghai market is much more oriented toward physical delivery than either the London or the New York market. And because of that fact, they're actually starting to set the price. So I think the big change, and others have alluded to this as well, although it's not really determined to my satisfaction yet, is that the control has moved out of what I call the Anglo-American Empire, the New York, London boys, into the Asian realm. Again, I'm being a bit cautious. You know, I'm conservative, even though most people wouldn't consider it that way, that I want to see more data before I put my neck out any further, but that's what it looks like.
But let's talk about this seismic shift away from the COMEX, away from honoring this New York pricing, because you know as well as I do, if you just remove New York pricing out of the scenario over the past couple of decades, silver would be at $360 or so. And I think that the seismic shift here is that the COMEX is being drained of its silver reserves and the world's waking up to the fiat printing presses going burr. So the central banks are even stocking and stacking gold. Right? Isn't this the seismic shift we've been waiting for?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of called it early if you want to, you know, I mean, it's in the record. It's not like I'm making this up. You could go back and go to my blog and look at all the interviews I've done. And it's been well over a year that I said the run to gold has begun. And that was well before the breakout at 2000, where 2000 was basically a ceiling, round numbers, and then it became now support. And I was saying the run to gold has begun. And what did you mean, Mr. David? And what I meant was that the central banks are buying gold hand over fist. They're setting records in 2022, 2023, and probably this year as well. And that's the smart money moving into gold. Gold, the adage that he who owns the gold makes the rules, in my view, is partially true. But the gold market is really establishment in a lot of ways. You're not going to hear it from Wall Street or MSNBC or CNN or any of these other, as you call the Mockingbird press, rightfully so. But you're going to see the big money moving into gold. So that started. And the analogy I gave, Sean, was that the run to gold goes like this. You're kind of it's a walk, kind of dragging your feet. And then it's a slow walk, and then it's a regular walk, and then it's a low jog, and then it's a full jog, and then it becomes a run, and then it goes into an all-out sprint. That metaphor, that analogy is how the gold market accelerates. So right now we've gone from the dragging your feet to pretty much a normal walk because the banks have set the foundation for buying gold hand over fist and in an accumulation pattern. In other words, they're buying enough to not move the market too much, but certainly stuffing their coffers full because the amount of volume that they've absorbed over the last 2 years. So now that foundation has been set. They care about silver, but not in a monetary sense. So now that's been set. So any new buying in a new paradigm where the public is waking up, China says enough of your crap, we're going to set our own price and we're going to let the market determine, you know, what the delivery price is for an ounce of silver, ounce of gold, or should say, you know, 100 ounce bars or kilo bars or whatever the metric is. And this is putting pressure on the entire global market because both gold and silver are global commodities that are known to be money for thousands of years. And with all that's going on in this, make it up as we go, we'll take care of it, trust us attitude toward the U.S. dollar in the bond market and the interest rate problem, people are catching on. And the Chinese were the last to go off the silver standard in 1935. And, you know, if I were Chinese, I might have a bit of a grudge on my shoulder talking to my great-grandparents about what happened during the Opium War. So there's a lot to play into this, Sean, but the bottom line is the price is moving up. Do we have to know exactly why? No, we don't. All we need to do is look at the volume and the price differentials day to day, week to week, month to month, and what the sentiment is, and who's going to be able to explain it away. It matters to some degree, but really it's the market itself that we have to pay attention to, and kind of let some of this other stuff just fall by the wayside, and whether or not we make an exact determination or not, the market doesn't care. The market's going to carry on.
Yeah. And some of these questions are kind of rhetorical because, you know, the elephant in the room is the money printing around the world. So when I see these chartists and people on Twitter trying to give their studied view of the charts of Bitcoin or gold or silver, what they seem to forget is the money printing. This country, $1.1 trillion in interest alone on the national debt. That's where we sit now, guys, as this government creates another, boy, what is the figure? Another $1 trillion of new debt every 100 days. So let me go back to that chart I showed you guys, because it really, really ought to make your toes curl. This should scare you. So it's a 17-year chart. Zero Hedge last night tweeted this out. This is not normal. What you're seeing here, now you got to keep in mind our debt. We need to keep, or this government, this criminal government needs to keep issuing the debt to keep this Ponzi scheme going. So they need people to buy the 10-year treasuries. Last night, gold spiked higher, hitting 2,403, something like that. And the treasury interest rate plummeted. If you look at the 17-year chart, they trade pretty much in tandem because they need people to buy the debt and not turn to gold. Something, in my opinion, is really, really breaking pretty quickly now. We're going to turn our attention to your newsletter here in just 1 second, but your thoughts. I mean, this is the proof in the pudding that things are breaking and people do not want to hold fiat anymore.
Yeah, I really can't add on to that, Sean. I'll just try to emphasize it. I mean, I've said, you know, in plain English, that if you don't trust a dollar, you know, month to month, going to the grocery store, not knowing how much your, you know, bag of groceries is going to cost, why would you trust a 2-year note or a 5-year note, or for God's sakes, a 30-year bond? If it's not going to be, you can't trust what its value is going to be, its purchasing power a few months out, why would you trust it any longer than that? And that's why you've got this distortion in the yield curve where, you know, short-term money has a higher yield than long-term. And this is the banker's dilemma, is to borrow short and lend long. And they're upside down. And now, as you said, that chart shows it's broken. The system is broken. This system has been broken for a very long time. The system has been broken since I first entered on the internet. But that doesn't mean it's manifested. You know, the adage, was it Hemingway? I forget, Sean, help me out. But, you know, how'd you go broke? Very slowly at first, and all of a sudden. We've hit that acceleration point. Once you hit that, it's usually psychological more than it is fundamental. The fundamentals have been in place with too much printing for a long time. So what's the magic formula? The magic formula is that there's been a shift in, let's say, the market, that people say, yeah, I don't care about your interest rate. I care about whether or not I preserve my wealth or not. You can keep your dollar at 5%. You can keep it maybe at 10%. You got to remember, when we saw that the interest rates went up to well over into the 20% range in Volcker, those are unheard of. The inflation rate that was put in the CPI at that time was around 13%. And interest rates before Volcker were, I think, somewhere around 8. I have to look. But he came in and pushed it up to 20. So you had a 7% real return on your money. Of course, everybody left the room. But this time, they can't do that. We're looking at $10 billion a day borrowing in the U.S. The whole silver market is a $30 billion a year market at $30 silver. So think about that. Every 3 days, you buy the entire silver market for all mining worldwide and all recycling worldwide, every 3 days. So what do you think is going to happen to silver price? Yeah. The amount of money sitting on the sidelines right now, Sean, is about $5 trillion. 1% of 5 trillion is 50 billion. 50 billion is the silver market for a year and a half. Do you think when this thing heats up, when people seek a safe haven and gold is running past 3,000, that 1% of that money isn't going to go into silver? Oh, come on. You might see 5% go into silver. What will that do to the paper? So there's a lot ahead of us, Sean, and it started, I think you called it, that chart's wonderful. I think most people can understand it. It's very simple to understand. My favorite expression, three words, all fiat fails. Mm-hmm. And it's failing, and it has for a long time, but now the market is confirming or vindicating people such as yourself that have been putting out the message for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, I really like that observation. 10 billion a day. You know, it's bad enough to say 1 trillion every 100 days. It's hard to process that. That's $10 billion a day of new debt. And your point is a lucid one about this phony baloney silver market really only being a $30 billion annual market. But Wall Street calls it a $1.2 trillion annual market. That's because of all the derivatives, the paper, the funny money, and it's absolute BS. It's not a $1.2 trillion market. Once all that derivatives paper gets shuffled away and thrown down the sewer pipe where it belongs, you're talking about a $30 billion market. Silver should be trading for about $1,000 an ounce, I swear. But look, compared to Bitcoin, silver and gold have been kneecapped for far too long. And I want to give you some real kudos here. I think you've opened up your mind to Bitcoin, whereas Peter Schiff continues to malign it on a daily basis. And to me, he sounds a little bit like Baghdad Bob at this point. Every single day tweeting against Bitcoin. What's the point, Peter? We know you don't own it. We know you don't like it. I don't understand why he wants to malign it every single day like it's his job. Maybe the Gold Council pays Peter to malign Bitcoin. And you wrote that because of the halving and the cost to mine a Bitcoin, the Bitcoin price is probably going to double after the halving, which happens in about a week. And doubling of the price takes it to $140,000 per Bitcoin. I don't want to steal your thunder here, but I give you kudos for opening up your mind and writing about Bitcoin.
First of all, I've always been open-minded, Sean. You know me, you've known me for years. I am as free market as they come. So fact, there was a line in that article you pointing out, we didn't show it on the screen, but I was aligned with a guy named Manesh Bindi. He had a program called Gold and Silver for Life, which I would fall into that category. I think everyone should have a hedge until we get a monetary system that we can trust and is beneficial for all. And basically the power of the money is in the people's hands and not in the banker's hands. That's been my lifelong's work and my dream. So, you know, I've always been open to anyone that wants to, you know, go 100% Bitcoin. I wouldn't recommend that, but certainly who am I to say? And the original article I wrote 10 years ago, my two bits about Bitcoin, kind of outlines my long-term view. Even though I wrote it a decade ago, it's still pertinent. What I point out in the article that I showed you is that Bitcoin's halving is an exponential function, and to be careful at some point. The point of the article is that all exponential functions eventually fail. I mean, when silver went from $11 in September to $50 in January of 1979 to 1980, that exponential function only went for a few months and then it burned out. Burned out for a lot of reasons. It could have gone higher without the intervention of the CFTC, but regardless, it did. So I'm just pointing out, be careful, Bitcoiners. The halvings so far have been predictive of the next jump in the Bitcoin price in US dollar terms or any currency's terms. But at what point can we look forward to that taking place or not? So what I'm saying is this next halving takes it to 140,000, which you need that for the US mining of Bitcoin that's currently around the Bitcoin price. So the miners are losing money in the United States, making money in some jurisdictions where the energy costs are cheaper. But on aggregate, it's not that lucrative a profession to be in the mining business of Bitcoin.
Right.
And without the miners, we are in a situation that you might want to rethink. So, you know, bottom line, I'm not giving financial advice. I've certainly lightened up. But again, I'm free market. I mean, if you think Bitcoin's going to go to whatever, then be my guest. But I will point out that, you know, Bitcoin going from 70,000 to 140,000 is double. I think it's going to be a little tougher this time for that to happen personally. And that's what I wrote about. However, I think it's a lot easier for silver to go from, you know, 22 to 44. And then you've got an asset that is certainly proven itself over the test of time. Whereas, and I guess where I kind of align with Peter Schiff, although I really don't spend much time listening to his stuff. Certainly, I don't listen to it about Bitcoin, but I will say, probably not necessarily on his behalf, just my own thinking is gold and digital gold are not the same thing. I mean, when you could put a physical Bitcoin in my hand, then I'll say, yeah, it's digital. Bitcoin's digital gold. It is not. It's software. It's a ledger. It's well recognized. The institutions have come on board. And to back up what you said about me and not necessarily Bitcoin, but the whole world of cryptocurrencies was about a year ago. And when Wall Street came on before the ETFs, I said, look, let's not miss an opportunity here, guys. When Wall Street gets involved, it's a sure thing, at least for a while. And that's what I started recommending, not Bitcoin, but a few others that outperformed Bitcoin, by the way, in the Morgan Report of speculation, because it was an obvious gimme. And I like things that are pretty much of a setup or a guarantee. So I'll give it back to you, Sean.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've sparked a couple of thoughts. And I think one of the cautions that should be discussed regarding Bitcoin, and this is why I've never sold a single ounce of my silver or gold. And a lot of Bitcoiners did. They abandoned the precious metals. Max Keiser comes to mind. Somebody who I respect a lot, who's very, very bright on YouTube, Invest Answers, a terrific channel. He gives away all of his information for free, and it's really good quality stuff. He basically agrees with Warren Buffett that gold's a barbarous relic, and he's all in on Bitcoin. My worry about Bitcoin, if there's any worry at all, it's that if they corral the really awake people in the world who know about the fiat debasement, who understand central banking, who've really studied this like so many Bitcoiners have, and that's why they woke up to Bitcoin. If they corral all the smartest people into it and then eventually crash it, that would be a very, very bad scenario for humanity. And that would give the bankers more control. That's why I've never sold a single ounce of my gold or silver, because I keep those as a hedge in case Bitcoin does go down, because then I think gold and silver vault higher and the people don't have any. That's a real potential thesis in my view, David.
I think it's a very important one, Sean. I hope I didn't jump the gun. But, you know, if you look at, I hired a new guy as a second analyst for the company. And his name is Ted Butler, not to be confused with the Ted Butler that everyone knows associated with the Commitment of Traders reports in silver. And he did an interview. In fact, it was his first interview with Daniela Cambone regarding the change in Bitcoin. And this is what I found in my crypto conspiracy series. Go to my blog. Go to the search engine, type in crypto conspiracy. There's 29 podcasts I did over about a year's time. And what's concerned me, Sean, is that, as I said in that document I wrote 10 years ago, my two bits about Bitcoin, I was concerned that the mining powers are not going to lose their monopoly. And if Bitcoin takes off, not only price-wise, but adaption-wise, it becomes adopted, then the powers of be are going to take it over, or at least look to take it over. Or if they can't take it over, they'll put it out of business. And I make a pretty strong case in episode 14 that MasterCard has basically taken over a great deal of the Bitcoin parameters. And so that concerns me. I mean, if you look at the white paper, you look at the start, what the initial proposal was, I mean, it aligns with almost anything a free market thinker would want. You are peer-to-peer. It's a monetary system. There's no bank, and we're our own people. But yet, that's the past. That's not where we are now. So I'm a realist. Going back to what you said about people going, you know, like Max Keiser, I mean, I don't think Max will ever have me back on his show, and that's okay. I still like Mac and Stacy, and I've had great times with them and been with them physically several times. And just enjoyed it all. But I'm not in favor of a maximalist on anything. But going back to what I said a moment ago about Manish Bindi, he was like so-so on Bitcoin, not very favorable to it. We did a shoulder-to-shoulder Facebook real-time live event years and years ago from a London restaurant somewhere. And he's become a maximalist. He has sold his business. He's got rid of his real estate. He's got rid of all his ETFs. He is 100% Bitcoin. He's got his parents 100% Bitcoin. To me, that's an extreme. I don't like extreme in anything, in investing, in my life, in a diet, or whatever. I think nature preaches balance, and that applies to investing as it does in other areas of our lives. So, but you know, again, free market, if that's what you think serves you best, then so be it. But I like what you said about the metals. I've always advocated a position in the metals for everyone, but not a maximalist position, or it's the only thing. I mean, as much as Chris Duane has done some great work, great thinking, and given a lot of his time to the public for free, you know, he's sort of a maximalist on silver. It's like all or nothing. Only those that have silver will make it the other side. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that. So I'll give it back to you there, Shama. Thanks for I think it's a balanced view that you take. And, I still hold some cryptos. Bitcoin isn't one of them. But nonetheless, again, it certainly has opened the minds of many people, or perhaps I had failed, not me, but our genre, about why sound money and peer-to-peer money and anonymous money, where it's not traced or tracked or, by the government, where we have some freedom in our transactions, which also liberates the mind and keeps freedom going, is very important.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. A couple of things you said there, and I'll do another screen share. You mentioned Chris Duane, old friend of ours, big silver guy, and Peter Schiff. I mean, Peter Schiff all in on gold for the past, decade plus. It's kind of been a dead trade, certainly compared to Bitcoin. Silver's been dead money, really, compared to Bitcoin, unless you're really good at trading the ranges. But you make a good point about going all in on any one asset. As much as I do like the Bitcoin I hold, and I will continue to hold it, this guy, Grant Cardone, who's kind of new to the scene in Bitcoin, he's, risen pretty quickly on Twitter and on YouTube, et cetera. He just announced that he is selling his mansion in Florida that he bought from Tommy Hilfiger just a few years ago for 600, I'm going off memory here, I think it's 646 Bitcoin. You guys can do the math on that. It's many millions of dollars. And that's what he wants. He wants to get out of that property and put all of the money into Bitcoin. So it is dangerous. But if these people are right, they're going to be the new billionaires. And I don't think that Wall Street probably wants libertarian-minded, freedom-minded people to be the new billionaire class, David. That is my biggest cautionary warning about this entire Bitcoin story. And I believe in Bitcoin. I own Bitcoin. But going all in on any one asset, you make a very good point. Very, very dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. Again, if you go back to my Two Bits About Bitcoin article, and you can just type that into the search engine, it'll pop up. And it just, reiterates what you basically outlined. I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, the diversification thing is important, especially when you're vulnerable, when you're really looking at a new monetary paradigm is what you are. And this is not that unusual. I mean, the cyber currencies and what we have with everyone owning a computer and basically a computer in their hand with a smartphone and all that goes on in today's modern technological world, that's new. But what isn't new is at the end of these great inflation, Sean, at the end of the great inflations, the free market comes to the fore and you have solutions that are made by the people. And one of the solutions made by the people, maybe it was a group, maybe not, maybe the NSA was involved, maybe not. I don't know. I have ideas, but I can't prove them, so I won't state them. Regardless, Bitcoin was basically the foundation of a new way out for who? Well, initially, at least, it was for the public at large. And that's what happens at these great inflections. And we are, as you pointed out, and I think the most important thing we've talked about is the bifurcation of that curve where the interest rates are not keeping up with the gold price. Another thing that isn't well known, and I don't know if you could pull it up real quickly, Sean, or not, but is the In Gold We Trust people. That, by the way, my new hire, Ted Butler, writes the silver section for that. So we're pretty well recognized in the, in let's say the more professional ranks of the gold and silver sphere. I digress and come back. But if you look at In Gold We Trust and you look at the gold chart, the S&P or the Dow Jones in terms of gold, what you'll see is that the Dow Jones peaked in the year 2000. So if you're using a metric of a constant, which an ounce of gold is a constant, it's the same mass anywhere in the universe, you will find that the stock market is well lower than it was in the year 2000 if you equate it to gold. So as you said, gold hasn't done much. It's been flat and all that. Well, in terms of USD, yes. But in terms of the stock market, no. So there's a lot to this market that people don't understand. And of course, I've been educated in this part of the market for years. I mean, one of the people I learned about first was Jim Dines. He wrote a book called The Invisible Crash. He did exactly what I just outlined. Is you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average as far as a nominal price, it's just going sideways. But if you use the metric of gold, it's in a crash, an invisible crash. The nominal numbers are every day put out in the mainstream financial press. Hey, Dow Jones went sideways. We haven't moved up or down in the last several years, blah, 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 blah. All true from a nominal numbers aspect, but from a measurement of the ultimate money of thousands of years, it was crashing. So that's just something, again, that keeps us in a balanced modality where we have some precious metals, we have some crypto, Bitcoin, whatever, we have some real estate, we've got some stocks. And I think that's a way to approach the market. In fact, one of my greatest mentors was Harry Browne, B-R-O-W-N-E, ran for the Libertarian presidential slot 2 times, got to know him pretty closely at the end of his life. And he had one metric called the perfect portfolio. And it was so common sense and worked so well that I'm surprised that more money managers don't adopt it. You basically had 5 categories. You only looked at your portfolio on an annual basis. You saw what was up and what was down, and you sold what was high, and you bought what was low, and you rebalanced the portfolio once a year, and it did exceedingly well in an inflation, deflation, stagflation, or I don't know what to call it, economy.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. You buy the stuff that's out of favor, and you sell the stuff that's nosebleed level stuff. Like NVIDIA stock, in my opinion. We shall see. We shall see. All right. We don't have to end the conversation quite yet, but I do want to just read one last thing from your report here, because again, it just plays into the cautionary tale, the cautionary side of Bitcoin. I personally stack Bitcoin every single day through my Coinbase account. Every single day I buy more Bitcoin. I personally think it's not a bad idea if you've got the ability to do it, throw $50 a week at it or $100 a month at it. Just dollar cost average as a piece, as a hedge against the calamity that is obviously coming. It can't be stopped. But you write something very smart here, because I'm bullish on these ETFs. The demand supply story right now in Bitcoin is so out of whack on the demand side. Demand exceeds supply by like 5 times the daily supply today. But after the halving, demand will outpace supply by 10 times. Anyway, you write, now Wall Street has gone to the next level with the latest Bitcoin ETF being run by BlackRock. Believe me, their quants know far more than your editor. They must know what's coming at some point. Is this a giant rug pull where over 200 million people that own Bitcoin get the lesson of an exponential function? And with that said, one last chart to show you. I wanted your reaction to this. You know what's clear to me, David? If these criminal banksters could just keep us all in poverty, in perpetuity, they'd be thrilled. If they could just kneecap us all forever, they'd be thrilled. Because look what they did to the silver price this morning. You know, it was up some 5% out of the gate, and then it went down 4% in 20 minutes because of the shenanigans. They do not want silver breaking past 30. And one wonders if it does decisively slice through 30, I wonder how quickly it could go to 50, especially if India keeps buying, especially if China keeps buying. We are in a paradigm shift right now, David. And the whole purpose of this conversation is to try to wake the sheeple. Fortunately, you and I are not talking to the sheeple. We're talking to very intelligent, awoke people. So what would you recommend people do who are listening today, tomorrow, next week, next month? What is the best strategy in your view? What assets do you think people should be acquiring, and in what percentages?
So I don't like chasing markets. So if you have no exposure to precious metals, buy half. So if you're going to allocate, say, 10% of your liquid assets to the precious metals, buy 5% now and don't care about the price. Because a half a loaf is better than none, especially if we go exponential. And I agree with you, Sean. Once we get to the 30, 33 level, I think there's going to be some event, probably not one published or one that's apparent for us, you know, regular folks out there in the investment land. But there's obviously something that's gone on at the $30 level for a long time. I mean, Rostam Bedham comes out and says we've got to tamp down the silver market, and he's part of the CFTC. That's wrong. You should not be biased like that. You are not supposed to be in a conflict of interest position. Regardless, I agree. Once we get into that level, we could see 50 fairly shortly. Time will tell. So if you have none, you have to have some right now. If you have already bought in and you know paid during the retail run-up where, you know, Silver Eagle was running $10, $14, premium and your break even now, or maybe slightly under, I would just hold. If you have a position and it's comfortable for you, I would not sell anything on the precious metals side. The miners are where it's at, but they're really not confirming this move yet. But there's some really good assets out there. And the bottom line for these miners, meaning profit, stocks are supposed to work on earnings. A stock that has good earnings gets a higher valuation or price. And that hasn't happened in the golds or the silvers yet. And so there's opportunity there. So I would say, you know, one size doesn't fit all, but balance does. I would stay away from the bond market, all the bond markets, unless you're smart enough to short them. I don't recommend that for pros only. But I would certainly have some precious metals. Real estate, there's always a deal out there. You know, look for that perhaps. If you've made a big killing in, let's say, the cryptos and you're looking to exit and you want that house and you're thinking, you know, real estate may go down and Bitcoin may go further. My advice on that, or I should say my suggestion on that, is buy what you want. You cannot put a price on your castle. You've got a house you really want in an area you really like, and it's going to make you happy. That's priceless. So, you know, sometimes the Americans especially think too much about what's it worth or is it an investment. Look, your own personal residence is your pride and joy. I mean, if it is that, I mean, you might be living where you don't want to, but when you get that place you want to be at, don't think price, think priceless. I'm buying it. I can afford it. It's in my budget, and get happy, be happy, live happy. So I think I touched them all, Sean. I mean, there's a long ways to go in these alternatives, the anti-dollar, if you will. The dollar is in the final phase. We're probably at the bottom of the ninth right now, or at least in the ninth inning. And these things tend to accelerate as we get closure on this fiat fiasco Ponzi scheme experiment that started 50 years ago. And by the way, as most of your viewers would know, there is a jubilee that happens every 50 years in the Bible, because the compound interest can only go for so far before it blows up.
Yeah, this is the hazard of usury, guys. I mean, just think of what they've done to this country based on that Federal Reserve Central Bank charter. They issue the currency out of thin air and loan it back to the U.S. government at 6% interest, and they've been doing this since 1913. Obviously, it's in their best interest to print, 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 which is why we're now $34 trillion in stated debt and a couple hundred trillion dollars probably in debt in terms of unfunded liabilities. And the thing that probably continues to keep happening, guys, amidst all the printing, central banks will keep buying the gold top. So the rally for gold hasn't finished, according to Zero Hedge. And of course, that has to be true unless they manipulate it lower again, because the printing is never going to stop. They will never, Sean, ever stop printing, David.
Sean, I don't need the last word, but I want to get this in on your show. It's important for me and for you and for our viewers. And that is, you know, new high, new high, new high. AHT, you see it all over Twitter, all-time high. You know what? It's not. It's an all-time nominal high.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But when you do what's the paper price of gold, anyone can do this on the computer. All you have to do is go to a couple of websites. One, go to, just type in base money, M0. What is M0? You're going to get a number. That's the dollars. That's dollars in checkbook money or in physical cash. So you've got dollars. Now you've got, you need gold. Go to the U.S. Treasury, type in what is the amount of U.S. gold held. And it's about 265 million ounces. If you divide dollars per gold, you're going to get the dollar price of gold. And you're going to find out that in the year 2000, that was $2,500 an ounce in 24 years ago. And we're just hitting that number today. Since that time of 24 years ago and now, the base money supply has gone up 9 times. So you got to take that $2,500 an ounce and multiply it by 9 to get the same equivalent price into fiat. That's how much inflation we've seen over the last 25 years, or half of the 50 I just alluded to. So when they say it's an all-time high, yes, it is. But remember the invisible crash. We need the truth. And the truth is not that easy to see. But someone like me, and I'm not making this about me, Sean, and you know me, I'm me. But I was taught this. Look, I learned about the invisible crash. What the heck does that mean? Or that, you know, the Dow peaked in the year 2000 in terms of gold. And these are things that the general public will never realize until the currency fails. And once the ship has sunk, everyone knows how it might have been saved. And it might have been saved with Bitcoin. I don't know. It might have been saved with gold, but it certainly won't be saved by the dollar. You cannot print your way out of this mess, and that's what they're going to try to do, in my view, which means you're only putting more water into the ship, and you're not going to be able to bail it out. So if you don't have a lifeboat of some type to grab onto, good luck. And many people won't. And after that lesson is learned, everyone will know they should have had precious metals or they should have had an alternative currency. And that's what I want to get across before we end this visit, because I honor you. I honor what you've done. You spent a lot of time, and our most valuable commodity, rich or poor, is our time. And you've given, given, and given. And that, Sean, showed me the quality person that you are. And I want to just shout that out to everyone.
Well, thanks, brother. And I want everybody to know you're the real deal, too. Behind the scenes, you're just as sweet a man behind the scenes as you are on camera. And I really appreciate you, too. It's been nice to have you on all these years. And you make a great point. One last point I want to just piggyback on. If gold's new all-time high is a nominal high, imagine what silver should be priced at, guys. If silver hit an all-time high in 1980 of $50, and then help me out, David, didn't it revisit that around 49, 50 bucks in around 2010? And they immediately
2011,
cracked down.
Yeah.
Okay. That Sunday night slam, it went down $6. I remember it like it was yesterday. And what other asset, guys, in 44 years, is still about half of its all-time high? Silver at 28, when it hit an all-time high of 50 in 1980. I mean, we could do the back of the envelope math on that if you'd like, based on what you just said, the nine times gold. What's nine times 50? $450 an ounce silver? I mean, I honestly think that is equilibrium for silver is probably somewhere between 300 and 500 bucks an ounce, David.
Could be.
Well, we shall see. I continue to say silver in physical form is the most undervalued tangible asset on planet Earth, in my opinion. Not financial advice, guys. Just an observation made over a couple decades now. All right. We're going to show the website, or at least this fantastic newsletter, one more time. David, tell people how they can get these types of newsletters from you.
Yeah, just go to the main website, themorganreport.com. Be sure to get on our free list if you don't want to subscribe to the premium service that Sean's showing you here. And also I do consultations, so you don't have to be a member. If you are a member, consultations are half price. And if you follow me on Twitter, just go to the blog. And there are, in fact, on the landing page, there's little icons for our YouTube channel, our Twitter feed, and our LinkedIn. So if you're interested in connecting on any of those platforms, feel free. They're all free. I give a lot of my time to the public because it's been my mandate to teach and empower people to understand the basis of a sound money system. Because if we have honesty at the monetary system, which touches all of our lives, because we got to have money to live, and we're honest about it with each other, believe me, we have a much higher consciousness and a much better heart connection in all walks of life, everywhere and always. So certainly it's been my life's work moving toward that direction. And I think we're going to have an opportunity here to actually see that manifest. It will be rough. It will be tough, but it will be worth it.
All right. Great final words from David Morgan. David, thank you so much. We appreciate you, brother.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. I will leave the link below. Go support David Morgan, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll remind you guys every single day for free. You know, all you got to do to support SGT Report is check out the website, visit us for free every single day to get the antidote to corporate propaganda 24/7. May God truly bless you and your family in these times of tumult. Bye-bye.
They're striking deals in South America and Africa to build oil refineries and take all the nickel and the gold and the silver and the platinum and all the rare earth metals, and they're doing that in Africa. And then they drain the exchanges. And after all of the stuff is nailed down, when no one is stupid enough to use the Western price to sell it, guess what? Bang, they're gonna switch to a new pricing mechanism in Shanghai or in Moscow or in Dubai. And it will be based upon real life prices, not manipulative prices that can be rehypothecated a million times over to create an illusion of dollar supremacy, when these commodities, which we're told gold and silver are commodities, they're not, they're wealth, but the rest of the things are. And I'll go back again to Zoltan Pozsar, who said this is Bretton Woods 3.